Conversations with Richard Feidler on ABC Local Radio.
Hello, good morning. My guests for you today are Maggie and Katie Noonan. In most families, mother-daughter communication will be along the lines of, do you think that boyfriend is appropriate? No, you can't have the car, I need it Thursday, and by the way, I hate your makeup. But Maggie and Katie's mother-daughter communication sounds a bit like this. That's heavenly, isn't it? And it's harmonious as that all the time between this mother and daughter. Maggie Noonan is, of course, famous as one of Australia's most loved sopranos for decades. Her daughter, Katie, is just as well known to a different generation for her work with her band, George, and her own solo career. When they sing together, they bring together two generations of singers, two styles of music, operatic and jazz, and as you can hear, I just like to hang around them when they're doing the washing up, even though I might be asked to help occasionally. Maggie Noonan and Katie Noonan, welcome to you both.
G'day, Richard.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Is it? It's always that harmonious between the two of you, isn't it?
Of course, yes.
Well, actually, we do get along very well together because we love and respect each other, and I don't want trouble in my world. I avoid it at all costs, really.
Avoid it at all costs. And you're in the music business,
yeah,
aren't you?
That's
marvellous.
We've always been great mates.
Yes,
that's always
that's
been,
true. Yeah.
You know,
since he was little. Yeah.
The great thing about my parents that I have learnt from in regards to my parenting is that they always treated Tyrone and I with respect from an early age, and that kind of gives you a confidence that, you know, it's fantastic. So we've always been good mates. Mm.
When you sing with each other in duet and harmony like that, do you second guess each other? Do you sing each other, slip into each other's harmonies occasionally? Does that happen?
No, I haven't really done that. Because I come from a different world. I'm very classical and strict, and Katie she's the one that can do the creative things. It's not my scene. So, you know, I stick to what I do and she does what she does and it works.
So know. The difference in styles, then, you've got to stick to the dots on the page
and
Katie's got
and
more
Katie
room to play?
Katie can do her thing. That's the way it is.
So do you learn from each other then?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what happened was we got asked to do Women in Voice years ago. And I did it solo, and then they asked me to do it with my mum the next year. And I would have never thought of it myself.
Why not? It's the most obvious thing in the world, isn't it?
Well, I guess it is, but it's when it's in your own back. You don't see what's right in front of your face.
No, it's good it came to us.
It was better that way.
It was nice that
it was an organic concept that neither of us kind of... Yeah.
Then you're responsible for the performance, but you're not really responsible for the event then, are you? If people come to you... It's someone else's idea.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. And that was a little more relaxed way of starting off this project, I guess. Mm. And the idea was that we borrowed from our world. So I sang opera with the bona fide opera singer, and then Mum kind of sang jazz with me, which ended up
scary
being quite
for me.
And that was quite funny. Your whole
comedy side came out. Well, I am. I can be a comedian actually. And so when I did. What was the one
we did? It don't mean a thing.
Yeah, and so I went, wah, wah.
And then Mum was trying to do that, wah, 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 wah,
wah, wah.
Opera singers struggle with scatting, in other words.
Well,
don't
it's
they?
Not.
That's
yeah, right.
That's a pretty yeah. fair statement.
I could never
don't mean
scat.
A thing if it ain't got that swing.
Yeah, exactly.
Do up, do up, do up.
So and I sort of sent it up and had a flow.
No, I think Mum said it doesn't mean a thing if it
doesn't have that swing.
You can't say ain't. That's far too.
Oh, no. So that started it all.
What a wonderful thing it is, too. It's really rather moving. And of course, you're so alike. You look alike.
Well,
but it's
on
funny.
Stage too.
Big hair. That's a big help.
I think in our mannerisms, big boobs.
But I think when you look at the pictures of my dad, younger, because I've got the dark hair.
Yeah, the colouring.
Of course, this colour is perfectly natural, Richard.
Of course
There's
it is.
No
and so is mine, of course.
Of course, and no one should think otherwise.
Yes, of course. But I'm quite dark with the dark eyes. His mum's, you know, redhead with green eyes. So I've kind of got my dad's colouring, but
you've got more the Spanish-Irish, and I'm very much, I've got Scottish-Irish ancestry.
Normally, it's the daughter that helps out the mother with technology. And
most of the time that's true.
Most of the time that's true. But I, just before going to wear, you said, Mum, how do I turn my mobile phone off? And
Maggie
said,
actually,
oh, I just press the off button until it goes off. Is this the way it is? Is Mum tech support?
Now, listen, I would like to show you all the texts I got from my mum when Mum was learning how to text. And most of them were blank or one letter or maybe two letters.
But I can do it
you
now.
You can do it now.
And I've even learned how to punctuate too.
No, it's because I have my husband's phone because I lost my phone charger. I don't. Blah. It's a long story, but Mum has the same phone. So I wasn't sure how to turn
Who sets the clock on the VCR around the house anyway?
No, that's men's business. Like that. Women don't touch electrical appliances like that.
If it weren't for those VCR clocks, we'd be women would just get rid of us as a gender, I think. Us men. Now, Katie obviously grew up in a musical house. How about you, Maggie? Was your childhood full of music?
Appreciation of music. Well, my mother was a dance band pianist, but by the
pianist.
Yes, she was.
What,
during
like
the
swing?
War. Yeah, she used to play
in ragtime, probably.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah, she used to play for dancers because dancers were the thing then. During the war and post-war, and then she married and her children didn't play much after that, so I can't really remember going to see her do a gig or anything.
Did she have stories to tell, or were they
I'm sure she had.
Too unsavoury to...
I don't know. I've never asked. I've not gone down that track with her, actually. But and
stuff
then
happened during the war, Maggie.
Yes,
stuff happened.
I know. Well, she met Dad during the war. and then my father... is very musical. He played the piano and his mother was a violinist.
Was there a lot of singing in the house?
My mum has a lovely voice, but there wasn't the formal training that we were fortunate enough to have.
You said your parents really gave you, they shaped your own ideas of parenthood.
Well, yes, too. Because they took parenthood very seriously as a big responsibility, particularly my father, because my father had been one of 10 children and his mother died and the father couldn't look after them. So they were actually put in orphanages, the boys in one orphanage, the girls in another. So that was his background and pretty tough. I remember him telling me the story that the food was so bad that he had a cut in his foot and he deliberately went and walked in the chook's pen so he'd get an infected foot and actually go to hospital and have a decent meal. So, you know, that's the sort of background he was coming from. And he always wanted to give us the very best of education and everything. So when they discovered I had a voice, there was no question about sending me to the conservatorium, you know.
So
and I was one of five too.
So like Katie, you grew up in a musical, very loving, supportive home.
Yes. Well, they weren't theatrical family. They weren't theatrical parents though. There were times I think they didn't quite know what to do with me, because
why?
I was pretty well because I was outgoing a bit, I think, you know, and maybe they saw it as being a little bit show-offy, you know, whereas...
Maggie, your mum played piano in dance halls in the war.
I mean, I know, but it's just playing the piano. It's different to getting out there and
being up the front.
Mum, you're definitely the black sheep.
I'm a bit of a breakaway from the
other siblings are all kind of teachers or
working. Well, myself and my brother. My brother's done very well in America. He's lived in America most of his adult life, and he's head of the Vanderbilt University in chemical engineering in America, and he's also the head of the Oak Ridge Laboratory. So
wow.
He's done very well.
He's full on. He's the most published nanophysicist in the world.
Newman's known for their singing and for nanotechnology.
Yeah, he was quite brilliant.
My guests in conversation are Maggie Noonan and Katie Noonan, mother and daughter, both of them singers, glorious singers. A couple of years together got together and sang together on a CD that was called Two of a Kind, which was one of the biggest selling classical CDs of that year. And I'll play another song from that in a moment. But I just want to go back to your own musical tuition, Maggie. You were in country New South Wales?
Yes, lived in a little one-horse town called Wingham. And I desperately wanted to learn the piano and waited 2 years to finally get lessons at the local convent with the nun there. And then Dad bought a piano. I mean, again, I'm one of five, and I just loved it.
Do you remember your first performance?
And then I started to sing and that.
Do you remember?
Well, my first singing performance was, I thought I'd die, actually.
Why?
Well, I was just so nervous. I sang... Well, I started learning to sing with this teacher that was also teaching me piano, and she said, look, lovely voice there, let's have a performance. And I was so scared, and I said, I can't do it on my own.
How old were you?
12, I think. About 12. And I did a Deanna Durbin number called When April Sings, with a big picture hat and drawstring blouse and you know, the full bit. And
beautiful.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous song. Do you know it?
Yeah, I don't think I do.
Spring is here, not a mere January thaw, but a little robin I saw. You know, this is the sort of...
How lovely.
When April Sings, gorgeous. Anyway, this girl that was going to sing with me got sick. Well, I honestly thought I would die. But I went out there and I did it by remote control. I don't know how I did it. And I came off and I was actually hysterical. They were yelling out for more. But I got better. The more I performed, you know, now I love it. Put my big toe out on the stage and I light up like a Christmas tree, you know.
They wanted an encore.
Yes. No, there's no way they could have got one.
And you were going, oh.
I was hysterical. So I've come a long way since then.
And so this you had ambition and desire to learn music and a love of music, and that propelled you towards the Conservatorium of Music.
Well, I did my first singing exam when I was 16. We moved from Wingham to Newcastle, and I had a beautiful music teacher there. I did my first singing exam, and Elizabeth Todd, the head of the vocal department at the Con, examined me, and I topped the state. In fact, Katie topped the state the same age, actually, in her singing exam.
Not that there was any pressure on you at the time, I'm sure, Katie. Your mother
In fact, I don't think I knew that until I did. I don't think you told me until.
She only prepared for 3 weeks before, had a lesson every day.
So it's the advantage of having an inbuilt singing teacher in your house.
So that was a pretty good effort on her part. But then Elizabeth Todd said to Sister Claire Tobin, would Maggie's parents, or was Margaret Cummings then, consider sending her down to me, because I think she's got a lot of promise. So I did finish my schooling, travelled down every week to have lessons with her, and then at the end of that year, I won the biggest scholarship available at the conservatorium at the time, called the Amy B. Special Scholarship, which must have been a great relief for my parents, even though they never made me feel that I was a drag.
And wasn't that the first time it got given to a singer?
It was.
Which is pretty amazing.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. And what was that like for you, though, Maggie, as a nice country Catholic girl going to Sin City, Sydney?
When I look back at it, you know, I was pretty brave
wild.
And courageous, I think.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I got myself into quite a few scrapes through my naivety, I can tell you. I won't tell you all those stories, but...
Well, they're pretty saucy, actually.
Are they? You tell me them then, Katie.
Well, there was one... I just know one story where there's one guy knocking on the front door and another guy's knocking on the back door.
This is funny. When I went to showcase.
But all very Catholic.
I never wanted to get really serious with anybody because I had to finish my degree first. So I had this current boyfriend, and I went down to showcase and I met Brian. This
Brian, the man to become your husband.
This man.
See, all the rest were boys.
As opposed to boys. So the current boyfriend wanted to watch Showcase with me, and then Brian rang me and said, could I come and watch it with you? And I said, well, no, you can't, because...
My current boyfriend's here.
But you can come afterwards, because he's
I have a gentleman caller present.
So, you know, one went out, then Brian came, and then Brian stayed for 2 or 3 hours or so, and then there's a knock on the back door. And it's my ex-boyfriend. And I said, what are you doing here? He said, I've been watching you. There's nothing about you. A bit sad, really. He'd been stalking me.
He'd been
That's
stalking
fantastic.
You.
That's didn't even realise.
I'd had these odd calls at all time of the night. Now it was probably him.
Well, you were this glamorous young soprano. You were a real, you know, such a cat.
Thank you.
Maggie
and it was the 60s. It was the era of
the
very, very short skirts. I've seen some of those photos.
Yes.
That's
I've
right.
Got a tie
very
black.
Sexy. So this is the early 60s when you're starting to...
Mini and...
Okay, so things are starting to loosen up a bit. You're experimenting drinking half a cup of cherry brandy in a coffee mug.
Oh, Mum is
that sort
the
of
cheapest
thing.
Drunk in the universe. She smells.
Hello.
She smells alcohol,
Ryan
a wine.
Has saved
and
a lot
drunk.
Of money over the years with my drinking one glass and that's it.
I'm having a conversation here. I've got to do this more often. Having mother and daughter in the studio at the same time. Maggie Noonan and Katie Noonan, both wonderful singers who have sung separately and together over the years. So Tell me more about meeting Brian, your husband, Katie's dad. What was he doing at the time? You were working on a show called Showcase. What was that,
was
and how did you meet
Brian? Fantastic show. Very, very high standard television show. Hector Crawford days. Hector Crawford was the conductor of the orchestra.
The man that went on to make Homicide and Matlock
All
Police.
That, yes.
And,
yes, there's everything. A musical side to him, though, too. But Brian is a journalist, principally, but he, you know, a wonderful performer, and he could have done it full time, but never wanted to give up the substance for the shadow, I don't think. Which was good for me because he was very supportive to me. But, yeah, I went down there with... Oh, the last thing I was going to do was, you know, be serious, because this is why I'd had these boyfriends, because as soon as I got serious, that's when I started to, you know, walk away, because I knew I wasn't ready or they weren't right or whatever. I knew I'd know that bells would ring when I met the right guy. Anyway, I went down there and I realised that he was my main competition because he was very, very good. He was singing Pedro the Fisherman.
Pedro the Fisherman.
Yeah.
So he was a crooner?
Yeah, yeah. That, yeah.
Like a crooner. And I remember when we were moving house, there was all these bags of stuff under the house, and I got, because my dad's very good at not throwing away things.
He's a hoarder.
But he had all these bags, and I went through and I found an old TV Week.
Oh, yes.
And Dad's on the back cover.
Oh, he was a real, very good looking.
And then I found all these letters.
Oh, yes,
to, you know, oh, Brian, when you sing, my heart goes blah, blah, blah.
Oh, very good looking guy. Very good looking man. And,
what's that like for you to discover?
Early television. Really amazing. There's a point in your late teenage years or at various different points when you, for different people, when you realise that your parents are actually human beings with a life that's all as...
And maybe interesting.
And,
and they were cool
and
ones.
And they were cool ones. And
so you got, that was the moment you got past that. Oh, like, that'd be so embarrassing. You got no idea.
Yeah. I kind of went, wow, he's got this whole interesting thing. That...
And he never spoke about it a lot, really.
No, not really.
Because he was always a journalist and he'd loved being a journalist.
So it sounds like the both of you fell quite hard for each other then.
Well,
Maggie?
He proposed to me 3 weeks later.
3 weeks?
Mm. And you said yes.
Well, I did, but I said I could. He wanted to become engaged, and I said I just couldn't cope with that. I had 6 months of my degree to still do, and I said, but as soon as that's over, yes. So on the New Year's Eve here, we actually became officially engaged. We met in June.
Were you 20? Even
I was
20
very
at that
young,
stage?
Very young, very young. I'm not going to say.
Oh, in the Noonan household, we don't talk about age, Richard.
Maggie's
permanently 39.
I think it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's rude of me. I just realised that.
But I did marry young.
Yes, you married young.
No. I mean, yeah, you must have been.
Well, when they asked me,
had your 17th birthday?
When Tyrone, I admit to having Tyrone when I was 12. So you've got to keep positive about these things.
So Maggie Noonan, there you are. You've got this career ahead of you. You've got a seriously big deal scholarship.
Yes.
People are all looking at you.
Yes.
And
everything I touch turned to gold, too.
Everything you touch turned to gold. Yeah. And nonetheless, this suave crooner steps into your life and you agree to marry him.
He swept me off my feet. Yeah, he did.
Now, obviously, you must have had to start thinking quite hard about what that would mean for you and your career.
I did. But I always wanted to be married and have children. And the people around me didn't expect that of me. My teacher, Elizabeth Todd, has never forgiven me, I don't think, to this very day that I got married and had children, you know, because in those days the feeling was if you were going to be an opera singer, you know, that you had to give it all up, you know, which is, I don't believe you do. I think you can do both. It was a bit of a struggle, but I was always a very maternal person, and once I gave birth, my life changed incredibly. If I needed any affirmation that this little person was going to be the major thing in my life.
Well, this is a really big thing, isn't it? And I suppose this is it's like this for you too, Katie.
Yes.
You're both...
The miracle of birth is just amazing, you know.
Yes, but then there's that part of you that if you're incredibly talented, as you both are,
that
hard. Says to you, you really have to be in order to service the art that lives within you, you have to live like an intensely selfish human being.
And it's a very difficult struggle. Yes.
The best advice I ever had, and I've passed it on to Katie, was I used to take the children every 6 months to this wonderful paediatrician called Dr. Clara Spister. Now, she was a leading paediatrician. She'd written 3 books. She had 6 children. And I was struggling with it a bit at the time, combining the two. And she said, look, Maggie, try to have that balance there. Try to make the right decisions and know when to say yes, know when to say no, and when you say no, have no regrets.
Mm.
And I think that's the secret.
Nonetheless, it couldn't have been easy for you, Maggie,
because there
would have been days after. Tyrone was your first son.
Yes.
Who's the successful musician, he's right, co-founder of George with you, Katie. Obviously, you'd gone from a period where completely focused on this, and then the next moment, and you've gone through what every parent goes through. You've got a child on your hands that's probably might have been crying for an hour, and you don't know why. The place is a mess, you're tired, and you can't think straight.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, I handled it very well. It did come easily to me, and I'm wondering if it was because I had a younger brother that I remember him being a baby, and
it wasn't a surprise.
It wasn't a surprise.
And how about you? Mm. How about you, Katie? I mean, you've done that too. You know what that's like. You had a lot of runs under your belt, of course, before you became a mum. Nonetheless, you go from that lifestyle of really living very, very well to sitting in a room on your own, maybe with a child, and you can't even think straight.
Yeah, it's an amazing shift of space and headspace and values. I mean, what were you saying before about when you say no to something and there are no regrets? I remember when I found out I was pregnant, I had to cancel my first big tour as a soloist with an orchestra, with the Australian Chamber Orchestra, and I didn't regret it for a second. I knew that I would work with them again, and this life inside of me was just the most important thing.
Travel agent must have been upset.
I mean, I think the publicist at the orchestra was probably a bit upset.
I did it to them twice.
I did it second with the second baby. We finally did it, and on the last tour last year, Richard was like, "Are you sure you're not pregnant? Because this is third time lucky." But it's funny. I actually was really craving that experience, and I wanted to be a wife and a mother.
Mm.
And I spent all of my 20s just living out of a suitcase, surrounded by the intensity of the music industry and the kind of aggression and the boy club of the industry as well. And I wanted to be home and be the nurturer and be the carer. Part of me wishes I could just be a full-time mum and just do that. And then obviously there are the financial implications of that. But secondly, if you don't fuel, as you say, fuel your muse, I think you could possibly, and, you know, I need to sing because it's too much a part of me. And therefore, in order to be a good mother, I need to be happy in myself. So you just go through that balancing act that all parents do.
And I suppose you see me do it too, which hopefully helped.
And my industry is a lot easier in a lot of ways because I was essentially at that point lucky enough to be basically my own boss. So I could essentially book my itineraries. But it was a huge learning curve. And actually within the rock pop industry, there were few women that I could turn to talk about this with. And the only women I could really think of at the time who were kind of my contemporaries were Deborah Conway.
Oh, that was the first name that popped into my head. Was Deborah's.
Because I remember seeing her pregnant. I remember seeing her breastfeed, you know, backstage at the zoo. And she just all very much took it all in a stride. And Casey Chambers, because Casey had just had her little boy. But record companies, a lot of the positions in power are men, and they seem to forget what it was like to have newborns. And so you'd have your promo days, and I'd say, well, look, I'm happy to do Carrie Ann at whatever hour, but, you know, every 3 hours I need to have a 20-minute breastfeed break, and I need to know where I am, and my husband and the baby will come to me. And it was like I was speaking, you know,
foreign
Japanese.
Language.
It was very – and I hoped in a way, actually, that I helped make it possibly a bit easier for women coming – because, honestly, most the people at the record company had never had to kind of deal with that.
Maggie Noonan and Katie Noonan, mother and daughter, both singers. Maggie, who has for decades now been one of Australia's most popular and beloved sopranos, and Katie Noonan, well known, of course, for her band George and her subsequent solo career. About 4 years ago or so, they put out an album of them performing a whole lot of different kind of operatic classics and some extremely well-chosen jazz songs as well that was called Two of a Kind. Here's just give you a bit of a flavour of Maggie's gorgeous singing. I can't even pronounce the title. It's Eben...
Eben Leandro Nontana.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Maggie. Thank you. That's Maggie Noonan singing from the album Two of a Kind that she recorded with her daughter Katie and the Queensland Orchestra. What's actually happening in that aria there?
This is why it sort of pulsates with such drama and pathos, because Lawali is in love with this man. Her father won't let her marry that man. He's chosen her, the man that he thinks she should marry. So she says, I'm going away. I will leave my home. I will go forever. Never, never return. That's what it's all about.
I remember saying that when I was about 15.
She meets her, and they're killed in an avalanche anyway.
They're killed in an avalanche. I love it. That's so operatic.
It's all that for nothing.
That's right. Killed by geology in the end after all that. Isn't that tragic?
You're listening to Conversations with Richard Feidler on ABC Local Radio and the World Wide Web.
Mother and daughter who've led interesting lives are my guests in conversation this morning, Maggie Noonan and Katie Noonan. You'll hear more of what Maggie and Katie did next.
You're listening to Conversations with Richard Feidler on ABC Local Radio and the World Wide Web.
This morning my guests are mother and daughter singers Maggie Noonan and Katie Noonan. Maggie, of course, well known as one of our most loved sopranos in Australia over many decades now, and her daughter Katie, perhaps even better known as the singer of the band George, who's also had her own solo career. Maggie, just before the headlines, we were saying that you had Tyrone as a baby and Katie as a baby. Did you have to knock back any big offers?
I did, actually. I was offered work by the Munich Opera Company when the kids were little, but I decided no. And then when Tyrone was little, J.C. Williamson's offered me a role in a little night music, actually, for a year. But I had to give it up because they were happy they wouldn't let me do just Sydney and not do the tour. He wouldn't have known me when I came back, really.
And you moved to Brisbane?
Yes, Brian had this hankering to come to Brisbane. And John Thompson, who was the head of the Queensland Opera Company, was an excellent opera company at the time. So that's what lured me up here.
So you had Tyrone, and then you had, 7 years later, Katie?
Yes, that's right. And that's when we moved to Brisbane.
Having a little boy in the family is one thing. When a new baby girl comes into the family, the dynamic changes.
Yes.
How did it change? What was the arrival of Katie like?
I wanted one of each. It was wonderful. I sort of secretly prayed for a little girl. And so when she arrived, I just thought, that's it, my life's complete. I've had one of each, and I was happy with that, very, very happy.
The number two child has to stamp their foot harder because they have to get noticed. They feel they need to get noticed more because they're the littlest. Was Katie like that?
She was getting it anyway because there was a big... There was an age gap.
So Ty was at school.
Ty's needs were different to Katie. So
I grew up just adoring Ty. I thought he was the coolest guy on the planet.
Well, he is cool.
He's very cool. And now he's a very cool uncle too. But I just remember always saying, one for Ty, one for Katie. It was all about sharing. It was always sharing.
Yes.
And he's a boy and he was big and he was smelly, so I wasn't threatened by him at all. I was a little, you know, prissy little girl. We were just so different.
There is an anecdote too that's published in the sleeve notes of the album, Two of a Kind, that says Katie actually appeared on stage with you in her nappy.
Yes. Well, we were giving some performances and she actually came out and she had a little dressing gown, a crocheted pink dressing gown, I can still see it, and the little nappy. And she just came out and all she did was bow. She just bowed. She didn't do anything. She just... We clapped. She bowed. And we clapped. She was about... Just a little over one, just walking actually, but she got the idea that this is what you do. You come out and you
great
bow.
Gig. You bend down, they clap. It's fantastic.
Things have gone downhill since then, haven't they, Katie?
Yeah,
you're expected to sing now, aren't you?
Then she just had to bow.
Maybe it was the nappy, I don't know. Perhaps that could have been it. When did Katie show an interest in music and performance?
Oh, well, very early. I mean, at 2 and a half. She would go to the piano and actually really caress the keys, really play little pieces. And she actually was giving little recitals at kindies and preschools, the Montessori schools and that, when she was about four.
That.
There was always a voice there, but she was a pianist first. So this is what makes her the musician she is, I'm sure, you know.
And there was a love of drama as well, even at a very early age.
She went to this wonderful... We having two talented children, you had to be... And individuals, you had to be very careful what schools you put them into. So we actually left Toowong to go to Ashgrove because we wanted Tyrone to go to Marist and Katie to go to this lovely little school, Mater Dei, that had this fantastic principal who really understood Katie. And she used to let her produce these plays and put them on at lunchtime. And she often wrote the plays herself. And I remember picking her up once. Now, I don't drive, so it was always travelling by bus. I remember her getting to the bus and she threw herself in the bus. She said, I'm totally exhausted, she said. And the nun had told me this play, which she'll never forget until the day she dies, because she kept coming in and correcting people. I had to be there. And anyway, she said, I'm the producer, I'm the director, I'm the costume lady, I am the prompt, I am totally exhausted. And I said, well, of course you are, darling. I had to be serious. You don't laugh.
And you were six. Of course you were exhausted. That's a lot for a six-year-old.
That's a lot.
Maggie, was Katie displaying signs of independence at an early age?
Oh, very. Always a very independent child. As a matter of fact, I can tell you a funny story. When she was in grade five, maybe, and this teacher had been picking on her at school, and I said, look, Katie, you don't have to put up with this. You have my blessing. If it just gets too much for you any day, just walk out.
And what was this teacher like?
Oh, she just didn't cope with kids that were kind of flamboyant.
She
wanted all little
soldiers
in
her class. Mm. And she had two girls that weren't. Katie and this other
girl. Actually, she ended up getting her teaching license taken off her few years later.
What happened though?
this day she walked out.
You just walked out?
Had enough, I'm gone.
And and so she started walking down the veranda, and then the teacher realised she was walking out, and she started running across the quadrangle, and they said, stop that child. She sang to the librarian, so
the librarian caught me.
Took her back to the principal's office. The principal rang me and said, Maggie, I have Katie here in my office. She's just walked out of class. And I said, oh, yes, Ed. And he said, you know, she said that you said that's fine. I said, yes, that's right. Silence on the other end of the phone. And he said, well, look, he was a lovely man. In fact, he's often seen him at your performances.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely man. And that was the big reason why I wanted to go there, because the principal, he was lovely. He said, I think we need to talk. So we did go and talk about it, and things did change. But I think for Katie, that might have been a bit of a defining moment for her, that she knew she could trust me, that I would stick up for her.
But also you can walk out of a situation where you're being bullied.
Yeah. Yes,
well,
exactly.
Well, pretty much it was kind of bullying, really.
I'd had a terrible time at school. I'd had an aunt that had made my life unbearable for 3 years. And I never told my parents. I suffered it all in silence. But one thing that came out of it, I promised myself that I would never let if I had any children, I would never let them suffer at school. I would never allow that to happen to them, you know, because I can't... I've got a very strong sense of social justice. I can't stand bullying.
Yeah.
And
Katie had always been quite independent.
Oh, yes.
She did, at the age of nine, she told you she was going into town.
Well, she'd driven me crazy to go to town, and I finally relented this day. On her own. I gave her some money, and she knew exactly what she had to do, and I said, now, one thing, Katie, remember going off, we'd bought her these little pair of pale blue shoes in London with a little heel and trotting off, you know. They were grown-up shoes. And so I saw her onto the bus, and she had a time limit and everything, and I said, now, whatever you do, don't go anywhere near Dad's office. He was working in the city at the time. So she went into the Bloxton and Ferguson arcade, you know, and there was a florist there. And this is typical of Katie. Katie has always been exceptionally generous. She'd gone in to buy me a flower. And guess who walks in? Brian, because he used to come through there from his office. And Brian saw it. She said, oh, hello, Dad.
Poor Dad probably had a headache.
And then he rang me.
What the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Where's your brother?
I just saw it.
And then I got the bus home. Everything was fine.
I'm sure but it's very empowering.
It was. It was very empowering. And also Brisbane.
Oh, Brisbane.
You know, this is the mid-'80s. It was still very much a big country town. You know, it was a lot safer, I guess.
Of course, today, you do that today, you'd be castigated on Talkback Radio as a bad mother.
Yes.
My guests in conversation are Katie Noonan and Maggie Noonan, mother and daughter, both of them singers. Katie, of course, grew up. Had her cool older brother Tyrone, whom she formed the band George with. Here's a little bit of George, one of their most popular hits. This is Special Ones.
Isn't it funny how you never really screamed at my face, but your anger's so unspoken and unchanneled, permeates my essence to the point where I don't want to see you, hear you, be anywhere near you. You probably think I'm threatened by you, but your illusionary power doesn't threaten me.
Not going to be pushed around. That's not clearly directed to that that the Catholic nun that gave you a hard time in school.
It probably goes back to that.
That's Katie Noonan singing with George from the year, what, 99, 2000?
I think so, yeah. I'm just trying to remember. It was pretty much not far off 10 years ago.
Fantastic. George was fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty sophisticated stuff. How old were you when you were singing that?
2020.
Musically, really. And I'm just trying to guess what kind of a proud mum you were,
oh,
Maggie.
Oh, very. Oh, we hardly missed a George gig.
They were at the zoo at 2 in the morning.
Morning, down the front,
no one there.
I mean, you wouldn't.
$2 to get in for the gig. My parents were there. They'd bring all the people in the street.
It was amazing.
Everyone.
It was amazing.
Gigs.
Yeah.
And then you have to deal with that thing as well, Katie, of becoming a very, very part of a very, very successful band, and becoming instantly famous. Your album Polyserena debuted at number one. Not many Australian acts get to do that.
It's a pretty amazing blessing. Yeah,
double platinum. Yeah, well, blessing's an interesting way of describing it. I'm sure it is, but it's more like a slap across the face as well as a blessing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing looking back on it how much of, because we always just made music purely just for music. We never really had any career ambition, essentially, other than artistic credibility.
Oh, is this right? Is this why you loitered outside the office of Triple J?
Well, yeah.
Is this why you hung around Rolling Stone magazine demanding to be interviewed?
But it was about credibility. That's what we wanted to make music that was unique, but all the charts and numbers of units sold and all that stuff, we weren't interested in that. And I remember when we found out, we were in Yelling Up, just south of Perth, just played with Michael Franti and Spearhead, which we loved. We're in this local pub having, you know, good old roast veggies, because predominantly vegan band. And we all got these texts on our phone saying the album's gone to number one, and we just couldn't believe it. And we all kind of jumped up on top of this table in the middle of this tiny country pub, well and truly freaked out the locals. And then I think not long after we were playing, you know, it was a surreal time, not long after we were playing the Arias, and then we won the Aria, and it was beautiful because we felt we got there on our own path, and we weren't deterred from our musical kind of vision. But also the strange double-edged sword of the blessing was that it suddenly everyone had an opinion, and our little bubble of safety was kind of a little bit, well, it was gone, really.
Yeah, I remember talking once to a singer of a band that were very famous for a short time, and had a lot of love and respect, but a lot of dislike as well.
Oh,
just fronting up to a local bar and hearing a guy just turn around and said, "God, I hate your band."
Yeah.
You must have, you know, you get that.
Oh, yeah,
that.
You get all of that. Yeah. I remember having to stop reading reviews because you just take it too, you know. And there'd be some people who'd love my music and hate Ties, and there'd be people that'd hate my music and love Ties, because we had the two lead singer thing too. Mm. And that was a huge pressure on our relationship, because we'd always just been like brother and sister, totally supportive of each other and our music, and then suddenly, you know, the record company. It was wonderful, but, you know, it was hard.
Dickens, it was the best of times and the worst of times.
It was in a lot of ways, actually. Mm. Yeah.
Becoming famous amplifies everything.
Yeah.
It does. Mm. It amplifies the love, and it amplifies the intensity, and Yeah, it was an amazing experience, but extraordinarily fast-paced, you know.
And then we come full circle, Maggie, because then someone approaches you with the idea of having the two of you sing together with the Queensland Orchestra.
Yeah, wonderful idea, because it's been a fantastic success. It's amazing. Wonderful.
And now that I'm a parent, because I remember you going, oh, this is a really amazing experience as a mother. And now that I'm a parent, I just can't imagine how that would be, making music with my children.
I remember Lyle Chan, who was head of ABC Classics, he said, this is a moment in time that none of us will forget. And he said, this is something that's always going to be there, Maggie, when you're long gone.
You've got some of the most famous and most popular arias. And in some ways you could say on that album, many of them are very popular and obvious choices. But then there's some less obvious stuff here as well. And some interesting arrangements. I really like to play one of the tracks from that album, Two of a Kind, which is, it's mainly you singing, Katie, but you can hear you doing the harmonies towards the end of this, Maggie. This is from West Side Story.
Yeah.
And Leonard Bernstein. And it's one of the lovely songs from the end of the musical, isn't it? This is called I Have a Love. Isn't that fantastic? There you are. That's from West Side Story, the musical of that. That song is I Have a Love, being sung mostly by Katie there with some absolutely heavenly backup vocals by her mum, Maggie Noonan there. That sounds great, and it's so desperately sad, that song, too, isn't it? It's right at the end, and there's nothing. There's no hope for them as lovers.
Man, I think it's such an incredible musical.
Oh, it is. It's
actually my dream one day. I'd love to play Maria. I think it's one of the greatest roles.
It's a fantastic
role.
And
the right sound.
That is recorded with an orchestra live.
Yep, mixed live.
Mixed live.
Yep, but that's orchestra on the jazz tunes. There's an 8-piece horn section. There's a jazz quartet, myself and Mom, and a full symphony orchestra. There's like 70 of us in there, mixed to two track, mixed to DAT, basically, mixed to a stereo mix.
And performing that live together. That must have been an electric feeling for both of you.
It was amazing. And where we stood too, we were right in the strings, so we were right next to the cellos and violas. Yeah.
There is something really lovely about seeing mother and daughter perform, and there is the resemblance and all those things.
See, I guess I never really thought. I didn't really think of it in that way. But then, we did this tour, and a lot of people were like, "Oh, I bought my mom and I bought my grandmother." And the tour, actually, the Sydney dates, because we did three. Angel Place shows, which is amazing, around Mother's Day, coincidentally.
I didn't expect there was any coincidence about that at all,
actually. Not from the promoter's point of view, but for us it just worked out.
When you're singing together, do you dare look at each other?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, we work to each other.
Don't you risk laughing? I mean,
it's too serious.
It's too serious?
No, it's very serious, Richard.
How about crying?
Well, you can't cry. You
Sometimes
might feel
you
like
do.
It.
Actually, there were moments where I was almost overcome.
Yes, it's very...
Yeah.
And actually, a couple of times, vocally, we actually lock.
Yeah, there's a weird thing when you've got... When you share
genetic
that
thing,
genetic thing. And it happened with Ty, too, when we'd sing together. You just do this weird thing where you really do...
Which is then the same sort of...
Like, you know, listen sound. To Tim and Neil Finn together.
I have heard... siblings and family members, when they sing together, they talk about this experience of locking together. Tell me what happens when that happens. Describe what that means.
Well, I suppose it's like that. It's just a magical moment. It's just unbelievable, I think.
You stop having to think about it. It all just kind of happens, almost. It
You're perfectly in sync?
Yes.
Pretty much,
And it happens when we perform live, and it happened when we were recording. And not conscious of trying to make it happen. It just happens.
It's often said with amongst groups who've got siblings or family members in them that they can get that ability to lock from long practice singing in the car on long interstate trips.
Oh, see, we never really did that. We never did the long driving trips and the camping and all that stuff, but we did sing along a lot with our tennis racket pretend guitars, and started with Kiss. That's where we first formed our bond, Tyrone and I. The year was 1979, and I was made for loving you. And, we just grew up bonding over music and singing things like Crowded House and that kind of stuff together.
But what we must do, Richard, is play Tyrone's song.
I'm coming to that.
That he's
you're
such a mother.
Such a mother.
Such a mum.
Because it's a family song.
We are immortalised in song.
It's pretty amazing.
Which is pretty amazing.
Indeed. This is a song, since you've introduced it,
This is Maggie Newman. I'm Richard Fader.
Maggie's son. Katie's brother, Tyrone Noonan, has been in New York for the last, in the United States.
London. But he has done well in America too.
He's been overseas for quite a while now and is about to release an album. And this song is one of the songs from that album. It's called The Family Song. You're particularly proud of this, Maggie.
I just think it's amazing that he has written about us as a family.
He certainly wasn't prompted.
No.
He
just, you know, it's just what my life's all been about, and it's encapsulated in this.
Proud mother, daughter, sister, all those things. It's been wonderful having you together on The Conversation.
Thank you for having us.
On Conversations. It's been just lovely. And I will play the song by Tyrone Noonan, the song that's simply called The Family Song. Thank you both once again.
Our pleasure.
Thank you, our pleasure.
That's Tyrone Noonan, the brother of Katie, co-founder of George, and the son of Maggie Noonan there. And that's from his shortly-to-be-released album, and it's called The Family Song. Thanks for being with me today. Tomorrow, a bit different for you, a bit of mental air conditioning, because we're going to Antarctica. You can meet Sid Kirkby, a man who's literally gone where no man has gone before. Right to the heart of Antarctica, where time and space seem to disappear completely. He's probably explored more of the place than any other Australian since Douglas Mawson, much of it by dog sled. That's tomorrow on Conversations. Thanks for being here today. If you'd like to hear this conversation or others, you just go to our website. It's dead easy. Go to theconversationhour.com and you can listen online or subscribe to our free podcasting service.